ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Monday night travel on Nightlife.
Tonight we are travelling to the Micronesian nation of Palau. It's made up of 340 islands scattered across the Pacific. It's southeast of the Philippines. And it is home to some of the world's best diving and remarkable World War II relics as well. We are off to Palau and our guide tonight is Ute Juncker, travel writer. Ute, good evening to you and welcome back to Nightlife.
Thanks, Phil.
Tell me where Palau is again.
Okay, so you are kind of southeast of the Philippines. It's if you look at the map and look at the Philippines and then look at what appears to be the blank spot southeast of there, that's where it is. These are tiny little islands. They're, as one of the guys from the tourism board said to me, he said, yeah, we're hard to find.
I know. I was trying to find it on a map, but it is quite hard to find because there's no big island. There's just lots of, well, they say that, what is it? There are 340 little islands.
Of which I think it's either six or eight are actually inhabited. Hmm. I mean, this is a pretty wild destination. It's one of the last places on Earth that you think, you sort of look at it and you go, yeah, the hand of man really hasn't sat here that heavily, except, of course, it did during World War II. So there you go. Appearances are deceptive.
Exactly. I mean, hardly anyone lives there. I think the population's less than 20,000, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Nothing. And yet they've decided that they are going to turn themselves into a tourism destination.
How do they do? They're an actual country, Palau. They are.
Yeah, they are. And only for about the past 30 years or something. So they've been, they were a Spanish colony and then the Germans traded something and got it off the Spanish. And then after World War One, it got taken off the Germans and given to the Japanese. And then after World War Two, well, you know, obviously Japan lost the rights. The Americans were kind of running it. So it joined the UN in 1994, I think.
Mm. Okay. How do you get there?
So for Australians, it's now easier than it's ever been before because Air New Guinea has weekly flights from Brisbane to Palau via Moresby. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at flying time, it's pretty good. It's a couple of hours for each leg. Downside is you end up with a couple of hours downtime in Port Moresby Airport in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
Which is not that exciting.
So it's an overnight flight, essentially.
Yeah, you will, because of the time difference, you will get in late at night. You land in Palau at about 11 from memory.
Oh, okay.
11 p.m. So, but you've got that downtime in the middle of the night.
So, okay. Where are we landing though? Because I'm looking at the map, but there doesn't seem much to land on. But
they have an airport. They'd be in a bit of trouble if they didn't. Hmm. So the capital is Corolla, and it's like if you picture, you know, like a town on a Pacific island which has a yacht club and, you know, a number of streets and some shops and some low-key offices. That's kind of what Corolla feels like.
Okay. That's right. Looking more closely at the map, there's sort of one island and there are lots and lots of other tiny ones. There appears to be only about one road. Is that right?
Pretty much. There are a couple of streets in Corolla, but there's one main road on the island. Yes, so Babeldaob Island.
Hmm. So where do you stay? Where do you stay? Is it? I mean, what's the feel of the place? Is it a high end accommodation place or not? Or
there's variety there. So they've got Coral has a couple of hotels. There's a lot of liveaboard boats because a lot of the travellers who come there are here for diving and will spend at least a couple of nights on board, if not. But again, it's interesting. So they've hooked up with a couple of the bigger companies. So Four Seasons has a yacht there. It's working on a hotel. There's a Hotel Indigo opening, which is sort of a mid-range, mid-low high end, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And yeah, it's things are starting to develop because, as I said, they're very keen to try and attract more visitors.
Now, the thing is about things to do, it's not a Fiji, is it? It's not a place of palm trees and beaches at all.
No.
It's not a place of luxury hotels too, for that matter. It's not really a family place, is it? It's more for what? Who you would say? Diving in particular, is that it?
Diving in particular, diving plus, I think it's, if you're a diver, it is some of the best diving you are ever going to do.
Right.
Ever. But it's diving plus World War II tourism or diving plus cultural tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's a funny little country with some interesting peculiarities. So it has the world's largest collection of marine lakes, which this was not a concept I was familiar with. So a marine lake is a lake that is basically fed by the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got all these islands that are sort of jagged limestone islands, very heavily vegetated. And some of them have these marine lakes fed by the ocean. And there is one which is filled with a huge number of non-venomous jellyfish that have basically been trapped there and have evolved into their own species. And this place is, in a great feat of imagination, they've called it Jellyfish Lake. So they've got these really sort of unique ecosystems that you can go and explore. And you can swim in Jellyfish Lake as long as you don't touch the jellyfish. And Jellyfish Lake is really peculiar. So the water that you're swimming in is totally fine. And, you know, I mean, I'm 6 foot tall. I was perfectly comfortable swimming in it. There was no problem. But lower down than you go, there's actually an anoxic layer in which no life thrives. And then there's another layer of water below it. Like, you know, if you're into sort of weird natural phenomena, mm-hmm. it's really fantastic. But then it's also, I mean, surprisingly for this place that has this tiny population, was colonized various times, sort of, it feels like a place that sort of history has swept over a couple of times but largely ignored. But they've also got things like, they've got some lovely cave paintings. They've got a collection of stone monoliths that have been dated back about 2,000 years. So they've got some really intriguing things.
Hmm. The landscape is, as I said, there aren't sandy beaches, are there? It's volcanic. So we're talking about a rocky volcanic coast, aren't we?
Yeah, there's one or two places that get a beach at low tide, but no, it's not a beach resort. But I mean, the waters and the reefs are so stunning. Even if you're not a diver, even if you just like snorkeling, even if you just like water that, you know, shimmers in 50 different shades of blue, it's divine. Mm. You just need a boat rather than a beach.
Yes, but as you say, as a diver, it's probably primarily a diving destination. We'll talk about World War II in a moment. But there are extraordinary diving sites, aren't they? German Channel, Blue Corner, Chandelier Cave. Tell us about some of these.
I mean, these are places that, and I'm not a hardcore diver, but I know hardcore divers just rave about these places. I mean, Chandelier Cave is a place that's a huge cave, which you swim through about sort of 8 sections of cave, and there's stalactites and there's corals growing from the ceiling and there's big schools of fish swimming through. There are places that, you know, really shallow coral reefs where you're no deeper than 10 or 15 meters, and these extraordinary clam gardens and huge colorful coral gardens, and you know, you're seeing turtles and all kinds of tropical fish, huge numbers of shark. Manta rays, you know, we saw a manta ray in, less than 10 meters of water. And it just loved us. It was kept coming to check us out. And the magical thing about this is usually when you're going somewhere where the diving is that good, there are multiple groups at every dive site. And we actually never... Every site we went to, there was only one time we saw another boat at this site and they were just leaving as we were arriving.
Yeah.
So you just get to see these fantastic things. So even if you're a beginner diver, you will have an amazing experience. If you're more experienced, there's places with stronger currents where you have to hook onto the reef. And if that kind of thing excites you, that's great. But, yeah. Oh, beautiful. Just lots of cuttlefish and octopus and basically whatever excites you about diving, you're pretty much going to find it there.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's right. It's a sort of mecca for divers. The other reason that you might want to go, apart from diving, which is probably the main reason, but the other reason is World War II tourism, because there was a lot of fierce fighting between US and Japanese forces for several months here during World War II, and there were a lot of shipwrecks and downed planes and bunkers and tanks and so on, aren't there?
There's a lot of stuff you can see. And again, some of it you can see diving. I did my first wreck dive there. I'm a softcore diver. I like pretty fish and colourful corals. You know, I don't want anything challenging. So I've never done a wreck dive, but they were like, no, come with us. It's not very far down. You're going to like this. And it was amazing because there was this fantastic World War II ship and it was covered with coral. It had turned into a reef.
Mm.
And so you were both getting the ship and the reef, and it was very, very cool. But if you'd rather stay on land, yeah, there's all kinds of guides who will take you to check out bunkers, and you'll see downed planes or the remnants of tanks. Apparently the fighting there was really, really brutal. It was sort of, you know, one of the last holdouts, because it's not that far from Japan, so it makes sense that they were sort of holding very tightly there. Yeah. So that's sort of the sadder part of the history.
Yeah. What's the, I mean, what are the people like? There's only less than 20,000 of them.
I feel like probably 2% of the population.
Yeah. Do you have much contact with them on the main island?
Yes, so some on the main island, but also we did a number of village visits. And this is again, that they're really working on developing cultural tourism. They want to show off, you know, what their lives were like. They had these beautiful tribal meeting houses made of wood and coral and beautifully carved, topped with thatched roofs. And so there are a number of places you can go and visit those, see some of the traditional dances. Like a lot of other island cultures, they've got really strong dance traditions. And the people are, I mean, they're islanders. They tend to be very laid back and very friendly, at least warm climate islanders. So it's really lovely. And, you know, you can see how they make their living. Some people still have plantations. Some people are running fish farms. You know, they're always very happy for you to come and look.
Tell me about the famous stone money of Yap.
Oh, this is so cool. So I remember back when I was a wee thing and my dad was trying to interest me in coin collecting, which was not one of his most successful endeavors. But one of the things he told me about was the stone money of Yap, where they basically carved huge stone wheels too big to be moved as money.
Right.
And I just remember going, but how does that work? You can't take it to the shop and buy it. And I said, no, but everyone knew it was your money. And I just remember, you know, I was six or something at the time and going, people of Yap are stupid. But in fact, the people of Yap were not stupid, because it was like static wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was like, because it was like, well, everyone knows who that belongs to. And then if you do trade it to someone, then we all adjust and we go, right, that belongs to that family. But so Yap is another island, not that far away in relative terms. But it turns out that the Yap doesn't have any rock. So who knows how it happened, but at some point they went to Palau and went, whoa, look what these people have. They have stone. Let's use the stone. And so the stone money of Yap is actually on Palau. Fantastic.
There you go. All right, look, it does sound, as I say, if you're a diver or a World War II history buff, it does sound like a trip well worth making. We've been to Palau tonight. Our guide has been Ute Juncker. Ute, great to talk. Thank you.
Lovely, Phil, and I'll just slip in one more thing. As you'd expect, absolutely fabulous seafood.
I can imagine. Thanks, Ute.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.